This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And we are live. We are live here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram here for you, here for your pets. You know the drill. Come Sunday morning, what a great day to start your day, right? Learn a little something, something that maybe I even learned things from you guys too. So, no, it's great. So, of course, any questions you may have, I had a couple of things I wanted to talk to you about only because first of all, happy Mother's Day to all you mothers out there. And if you, as I said, my mom is gone, but I have kids and they have their wives and kids. So my grandkids are wishing happy Mother's Day. My kids are wishing my wife happy Mother's Day. So I'm doing that as well. So anyway, there were two things that came up and I got a call from ABC. I think on Tuesday morning, I'm going to be on the local ABC affiliate here in LA talking about, interestingly, and it came up because I'm getting a lot of questions about it now anyway. So if I'm getting questions from my clients, then chances are you're going to be getting also questions about this same thing, and that is rattlesnakes. So, you know, it's not a tremendous deal, but it's a lifestyle. And we do see, it's called the Western Diamondback, is common to our area in Southern California. And now starts rattlesnake season. It happens usually around as soon as the weather gets warmer. So it's spring, especially later spring and early summer and throughout the summer. If you guys have that tendency to take your dogs up to even Runyon Canyon or anywhere in the canyons or anywhere in the mountains, if you do a lot of hiking with your dogs, especially if they're off leash, because, you know, I know if I were to take my little Dwight, my little Frenchie, out to anywhere and he sees anything that moves, he is on it. And he is almost to a fault. All he wants to do is attack. And I mean, I'm talking squirrels. I'm talking other dogs. I'm talking cats. In fact, it's very funny. The very first time he met one of my cats, Ninja, it's a fairly good sized black cat. And it's so funny. So of course his immediate response was, "Oh my God, a cat." And he went, "Well, my cat turned around and started swatting at him and hissing." He ran the other way. Now it's so funny. If we're walking from place A to B, point A to B, and he sees Ninja, the cat, he will actually go out of his way because he doesn't want to meet up with that cat again. So, but he is a chaser. When we walk him, if like even on our walks, if he sees a squirrel or a skunk or a raccoon anywhere, he kind of remembers where he saw it. When we pass that house again or up a driveway, whatever it is, he will stop and he will put that look on and he says, "I'm going to find that sucker." So I would not trust him with a snake at all. So anyway, let's see. Yeah, so there we go. That's a good one. Northern California, and we got our first rattlesnake yesterday in our yard. So, no, we see it. In fact, I have a crazy story, which it's amazing I'm still here to talk about it. And that is this. So I, you know, we're very impossible to get into vet school. And I applied more than once, let's put it that way. The average accepted student to Davis back then, this is 50, 45 years ago or longer, actually applied three times. That was the average. So that means people like me applied more than three. I applied four. And then some were really super great grades. I don't regret a thing because I had so much experience going into vet school that by the time I got out of vet school, I hit the ground running and I'm way better than any of my graduates, my classmates. And I'm the only one still, as far as my clique, I'm the only one still working. Everybody else retired or quit. And I do make that distinction between retiring and quitting. One implies, in my opinion, this is just me, that when you retire, you had a great career, whatever it was, and now you want to move on to something new, a new passion, have a little time for travel, but you love what you did. When you quit, that the connotation there is, I've had it. I'm done. I hate this. I'm not happy. I'm quitting. And to me, I've had a couple of classmates that retired and some that quit. I don't understand the quitting. I can't imagine not loving it, but to each his own. So anyway, I finally get into vet school and I'm up at my dad's house up in the hills. and with my black lab, Thor, who actually started vet school with me. And we were playing ball, and he's chasing, I'm throwing it, he's bringing it back, I'm throwing it, he's coming back again. And finally, I throw it, he comes back empty mouthed. Thor, get the ball, go get it. He looks at me like, are you nuts? So I said, okay, fine. So I get up and I walk to the back of the yard, and it was a really kind of a lot of, you know, brush, and is right on the mountainside. I mean, a gorgeous home. And I see the problem, a little teeny snake. It would look like to me, a little garden, you know, baby rattlers don't have rattles. So I lean down, I pick up the snake, I walk it over to a different part of the yard out of the way. And I set, as I'm setting it down, it turns around and strikes. Fortunately, I was younger, so I had really good reflexes. I pulled away and I had one little teeny thing on my thumb, just one little hole. I was a little shocked. And, you know, I'm not an herpetologist. I didn't know that what a baby rattlesnake looks like. And they don't have really that big diamond head yet. Long story short, within, I don't know, 10 minutes, my thumb was four times the size, throbbing like crazy. And I, oh my God, here I am working so hard to get, I finally get into vet school and I'm going to die from a rattlesnake bite. So P.S., everything went well. I ran down to the office I was working at. I was a technician at the time, and I laid up some steroids and I iced it. And within a day or so, it was back to normal. They say that the bites of baby snakes are worse because they can't control how much venom they release, whereas adult rattlesnakes can. Number two, I was lucky that it was only one fang and I pulled away. So he didn't have enough time to deposit enough to have a problem. But anyway, that's my funny story about rattlesnakes. But I don't trust animals. So there is a rattlesnake vaccine. It's called Crotalus atox. Now, you got to know that rattlesnake vaccines, though, if your potentially pet is exposed, I 100% recommend that you do it. Okay? Get it done. Now, it's not 100% cure-all. You still need to get as soon as you can. It will buy you time at best. So I always say, if you attempt to go to these areas with your dogs where snakes are prevalent, make sure you know exactly the closest emergency facility that actually stocks, carries the anti-venom. You don't want to, in a panic, start getting on your phone looking, where do I go? You need to know in advance the closest place that you can go in the event that your dog is bitten by a snake. And that's what you need to do. Okay. Deb, how you doing? First of all, happy Mother's Day. Recently changed for dogs and told diarrhea, now eating dirt. What do you, well, eating dirt is pica, we call it. And that's just eating anything inanimate. It could be rocks, it could be dirt, who knows, whatever it is they're chewing on. There could be obviously something that he feels is being missed nutritionally. Maybe it's the volume of food. And if this, coincidentally, that has happened around the same time you change diets. I'm not 100% guaranteeing that is the reason. He could have not changed diet and he could have picked up this habit anyway. So there's something either in the dirt he's being attracted to, if it's been treated with something, or there's recent fertilizer put, who knows? Or if it truly is the food, what you can do is start giving him a little bit more of it. And if that doesn't solve the problem, then you may switch diet again, lead to something else, and see if that happens. But when they do this, it's behavioral or it's nutritional. So, and I don't know yet, and they're not going to tell us. So you need to just try a few different things. Dip, my friend, she hunts lizards, iguanas, and frogs. I'm sure that your little Jip, I love that name, would go after snakes too. I wouldn't trust him at all. All right. Let's go. Mac Toomey, moving from condo to a house with a yard. I'd love the cat to be able to go outside. She has a harness. Aside from snakes, what's the risk of disease? When it comes to cats, and you say enjoy a yard, that is great if, in fact, the cat only stays in your yard. Then you're worried about any rodents or anything that comes into the back. But remember, cats are hunters. So they're obligate carnivores. They love to hunt. And it could be there are many potential hazards. Not only hazards from what your cat might ingest, but what might ingest your cat, like coyotes, like snakes, for example, if they're in that area. So My feeling is with cats, again, if you lived in the country, you lived out where you know, cats are roaming, there are no cars, aren't dogs, a lot of dogs running around, there are no coyotes, and you want to have an indoor-outdoor cat, that's fine. In a city or an area in LA, especially with coyotes, I mean, just this week, one of my very good friends came to me. He says, Jeff, you not believe what I saw on my front yard when I woke up this morning to get the paper. And that was a mangled pieces in different areas of a cat. And it was obviously clearly a coyote attack. So when we talk about rabies vaccines in cats, speaking of, you know, rattlesnake vaccines, let's go back to rabies vaccine for a second. I am not a big fan of rabies vaccines, period, for cats. It can cause the feline vaccine-induced sarcoma. Not very happy about that, because that is a very severe, potentially deadly tumor. And deadly in the sense that if it's in the body, where we used to give cats and still do dogs vaccines, there's no way to get rid of it. It'll come back. You can do surgery. You get lucky. If you get it really early, you might be able to get the whole thing and core the whole thing out. But usually it's got these dendrites, these fingers, and it's going to spread. When we vaccinate now, as I do, cats only in a thigh or in the front leg, I like the thigh better, then if they get this sarcoma, which highest incidence comes from rabies vaccine and leukemia vaccines, two diseases that an indoor-only cat cannot get, will not get. They can, they just won't, because leukemia, the prolonged direct contact with leukemia-positive cat. Well, if your cat's indoor-only, that's not going to happen. Rabies, bitten by rabid animal. When it comes to cats, I say this all the time. Do you think really the rabies is going to kill the cat? No, I think the bite is going to kill the cat. Whatever it is, it's going to give it to them. That they're going to go, raccoons are aggressive. Coyotes, forget about. So what do you care about the rabies shot? Now, some states it's required by law. Again, even if it were, I'd say, don't worry about it. Okay? Because you don't have to register your cats. And you and I are the only ones, and your friends and your family know that you even have a cat. So just leave it at that. Don't vaccinate against rabies in an indoor-only cat, period. That's my recommendation, and I stand by it. Steph, how are you? Okay. Steph, you have cats. Know that. So I'm not, as I said, I don't believe in rabies unless sometimes if you have to go to a boarding facility, it makes no sense to me, but they want to make sure the cat's vaccinated against these things. You know, it for leukemia, it's prolonged direct contact. That's not going to happen with another cat, especially if indoors only. So I try to avoid them if I can, but rabies, if you have to give those vaccines, you need to do it in the thigh. Tell your veterinarian that's all you want it. All right. No free roaming. I was only thinking about bringing her in the yard with. Sure. If you're in there, if you're there with a leash and you're there too, then I'm much less worried because wherever you go, she's going to go and vice versa. So you're together. If you see something that is dangerous, you're going to come back inside. You're going to pick your cat up and go back inside. So in that case, I have to check. I don't know if even the cordyceps vaccine is even given in cats. I don't think it is. I know they advertise it's for dogs. I'd have to check and see if it would be harmful to cat. I have a colleague of mine who is an internal medicine specialist on faculty at Colorado State University Vet School. And one of his things is infectious disease and diseases. So I'll check on that. All right. Amanda, good morning. Good morning. All right. Let's see. The next thing I wanted to talk about, and I'm getting a lot of questions about it, and I'm seeing for some reason, I'm seeing a lot of it, and that is seizures. Now, I don't know, show of hands, how many of you have pets, past or present, that have problem with seizures? So just some guidelines, if you will, because everybody freaks out. They see their pet having a seizure, and they just freak. So just that thing. First of all, there is, unless it's a string of seizures, one after another, that are lasting, you know, minutes or even longer, then, hey, Deb. So then, you need some emergency care. Usually, depending on the age, that'll help indicate what the possible reason for the seizures are. All right. The animal's behavior before and even after, and I don't mean immediately after, because immediately after a seizure, there is a period that's called post-ictal phase. And that phase is, they're still going to be out of it. I mean, you know, when you see a dog seizure, I mean, there are a lot of energy being used. So afterwards, they're tuckered out. They want to just rest. But I'm talking about even shortly after that phase, how is the animal acting? Are there any other signs of neurologic dysfunction? Because that's really what it boils down to. And then, of course, age. For example, one of the number one causes of seizing in a young adult to a middle-aged dog is going to be epilepsy. Now, if you saw your pet get a hold of something that could be toxic, then that's a different story. They ate something, whatever, and before you know what they're seizing. Mushrooms, for example, something that is a very neurotoxic type of food or plant, then yes, they can seize. But we're talking about your standard dog, never a problem. You're a happy window, you walk in or you sit in, all of a sudden starts to seize. No history of anything bad. And he's 5 years old. What are you thinking? I'm thinking epilepsy, until proven otherwise. So what do you do? Is it an emergency? No. If they stop seizing. Now, one thing about seizures also, just so you know, seizures can have aftershocks. All right. Hey, JB, can have aftershocks. So that means almost like an earthquake. So they can seize, have a big seizure, and then, you know, 20 minutes, an hour later, they can seize a little bit again. That's probably part of the initial seizure. It's not necessarily something new. So the first thing I say is don't panic. Don't panic unless it's a seizure that's lasting more than, you know, 10 minutes, all right? Even five consecutive minutes. Most seizures last a minute or two. Then, yes, you might want to go and take your pet to the veterinarian for treatment. And then, but mostly it's just going to be anti-seizure medication. Not even anti-seizure, just calming medication. Valium, things that you can give, trazodone, things that will just kind of put them into a state of sleep. Then you worry about the diagnostics. Now, let's talk about diagnostics. Diagnostics, first thing and only thing I would do would be young to middle-aged dog, out of the blue, seizes. After the seizure, 100% normal. All right, I'm not treating. And that's just me. I don't treat. What I'll do is I probably will take a blood test, see if there's anything abnormal, because severe elevated liver enzymes could cause seizures. High kidney failure can cause seizures. But mind you, these things don't pop up overnight. Those diseases, you would know beforehand there are some other problems with this pet, okay? So you already have a clue. But when they're perfectly normal, they're not drinking tons of water, they're not urinating, you know, in excess, they're not vomiting, they're still eating fine, you know, so there's no evidence of a liver disease. There's no evidence of kidney disease. But those things could actually cause seizures when they get bad enough. So my first course of action is I'm going to take a blood test just to rule out things that might indicate a problem. Next step, I wait. You don't treat it one seizure, especially in a young middle-aged dog that's otherwise acting totally fine. So what we do is we see, okay, are we going to have a second seizure? If so, when? How long are we going to wait? And my feeling is that when we have dogs that seize and we put them on medication, I tell an owner they're still going to seize again, probably three times a year, maybe every 3-4 months, 3 or 4 times a year. Well, if I have a dog without meds that's only seizing 3 to 4 times a year, why am I going to stick medication into it? Let it be. You can see they come, they go, they pass, and everything is fine in between. Don't worry. Don't panic. Now, if they're coming more frequently than that, then yes, I will probably start medication without getting too bad. There are a couple of medications out there. I'm still old-fashioned. I like what's called phenobarbital, but a lot of younger doctors are using Keppra, levetiracetam. That's okay too, and sometimes I've done both. Okay, next is now what happens when you have an older dog. An older dog who seizes, like 10 years old, 11, 13, whatever, and they have a seizure for the first time. Is epilepsy high on my list? No, it's not. It's still on the list. You never take these things off the list. Because I always joke, the dog didn't read the book. The dog doesn't know when it's supposed to have a seizure or supposed to have evidence of epilepsy or something other. So you still got to obviously be aware. But now I'm thinking about it. Now I'm really concerned. I want to know how this dog has been aging, how this dog has been acting, how this dog may have eaten. Is it possible to pick something up, etc. I'm a little bit even more concerned about the history, because it's not typical. Again, dog didn't read the book, but it's not typical for a dog of that age to have epilepsy for the first time, in other words, seize for the first time. Is it possible? Of course it's possible. As you learn in life, anything is possible. But is it probable? No. So now I'm thinking, okay, do we have an itis, meaning an inflammation of, a meningitis, an encephalitis, the meninges, the brain itself, the brain tissue? Do we have a brain lesion, a severe infection, a tumor? So these are the things that I'm worried about. So when it comes to this kind of seizure in an older dog, now I'm going to probably do a little bit more of a workup. Brain x-rays really are not that helpful. Unless you have a really big mass, then yes, you can see that on an x-ray. Usually for the brain, you're going to need ideally an MRI. CT can help, but it's not as detailed as an MRI. And then you really have to start asking yourself some questions. And this is where I kind of might, as I always say, I'm very proud to be a practical doc and not an academic doc. Academia, they would be throwing into these things regardless of what your feelings are, personal feelings. So anyway, I'm going to take a quick break because I'm getting dirty looks again from Mark. We have to break for our quick sponsors, and then don't go away. I'll put up yourselves. I'm going to do a little muting on the show, so on my radio show, so I can talk to you guys on the break. Don't go away.
Oh, sure. It's all fun and games until someone ends up in a cone. That's right. We're animals. Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
All right, we're back. So we're just talking about, for Pet Life, we're just talking about the potential for treating if you knew that the results of a test may indicate something really bad. So do you do the test, spend a lot of money, all right? Or say, look, I'm not going to treat a tumor. I'm not going to treat a major, something that's going to require surgery or radiation or chemo in the brain. I have an older dog already. So why don't we assume, or let's treat for one of the, maybe an infection, maybe with a meningitis, some steroid. And let's see if that works. We call it response to therapy. If response to therapy works, who cares what it was? You're doing something. And if they don't work, that where the next thing is to do all these fancy, expensive tests, then and I'm not going to treat it anyway. So why do the tests? So this is where it's so individualized. Everybody has their gut reaction. And, this is what... it's important to, and you should know this stuff in advance and talk to your veterinarian. And this is when I send clients, for example, to a specialist, and let's say in this arena, it's a neurologist or an oncologist for cancer. I ask them to ask the doc, don't just tell me what you could do. I'm sure there are things you could do, but ask them what you should do. Ask them if this were your dog, what would you do? If this were the diagnosis that we have, how successful is the treatment? Yes, you could treat it. There's a chemo. But what are we looking at? Are we looking at 2 months, 5 months, 6 months? What's it going to cost me for those 6 months? And how much of a guarantee do I have it's going to be 6 months? So this is why when it comes to these specialties, you really need to sit down and ask yourselves and the doctor. One of my favorite oncologist and my favorite internist, okay? The reason why they're my favorite, not just because they're so good, it's because they are real. They are real. They would not try to sell you something that is, the chances are 2%, 10%, 90% failure. Yeah, of course they can do it. For some people, if money is no object, and that animal is important, and you're risking, you're willing to do it, then go for it. But you need to know in advance that you're up against the wall, and that's truly how I built my practice. It's that honesty, and I always joke. I spend more time talking people out of a procedure or a test, as most vets are going to talk them into it. And I like to take things in steps. And Rome wasn't built in a day. I don't have to do every single test. What I'll do is I'll look at the most obvious disease or condition. Let's try to treat that. And if that doesn't work, all right, next up, we're going to do this thing, this test, because now I rule out the second tier. And then we might have the third tier. I'm not treating for all three tiers at once, but I don't even know what we're dealing with. So this is where, again, I get so frustrated when I get records from other places. I'll say, why did they do that test? I mean, I just had a situation where a dog came in to their vet, and they complained about maybe I saw a tick on the dog's ear. Okay? That means nothing. Well, this vet did a full, what's called a PCR panel, for all of the tick-borne diseases, including Lyme. We don't see Lyme in California. And it was for $300-something dollars. That is a total ripoff. Because A, it would take a long time, weeks before you're going to get a real answer. And it's so unlikely to see that. And especially if they weren't even sure the tick was there. Now, if I were to see a case like that, and there was even a concern, even though the animal was acting totally perfectly, I would have treated him with some doxycycline, which is the antibiotic we would use if the dog had one of these tick-borne diseases, babesiosis, ehrlichiosis, right? All those things. So that's kind of how I feel about this stuff. And I'm very happy when you're faced with it. But I guess back to the beginning of the seizure discussion, it's usually not an emergency unless the seizure is lasting for a long time and they don't seem to come out of it. Then get your behinds in the car and go to your local emergency facility. But if it just otherwise, don't make sure they don't hurt themselves. Don't make sure they're not on a couch where they can fall off the couch. Don't put your fingers near the face. They're not going to swallow their tongue. So you don't have to worry about sticking your hands in the mouth. They will chomp down on you unknowingly. So be careful yourselves. And that's kind of what you want to do. So anyway, I would highly recommend that you wait it out and you'll have time. See what happens hours, days later. And if there's another smaller seizure within a day or two, probably wait it out as well. As I said, that's more like a post-ictalis, like a little aftershock. It's not a new episode from the beginning. And then by the second or the third seizure, by the second seizure, if it happens within a month or two or even three, and then you want to, start medication, you can. 3 months, I personally, because I don't like sticking drugs at them, and you got to do it every day, twice a day, levetiracetam, Keppra, three times a day. So it's like, really, do you want to do that? If only they have a seizure four times a year? So anyway, and I'll be happy. If you have a situation like this, reach out to me. You know how to get a hold of me, and we'll do that. All right, any other, I had a hot start question on a Frenchie. So, I shouldn't say that. A hot spot is a moist lesion, and it comes mostly from the dog doing it to himself. It's self-trauma from biting, licking excessively, and starts out as probably some sort of skin infection or a bite or an allergy, and they start licking. Then they start licking, and they irritate the skin. Now the skin is irritated. What does a dog do when the skin is irritated? He wants to lick. So it's a vicious cycle. So usually there's a secondary infection, whether the infection is partly what started it, was it just an allergy, was it a physical scratch or an injury, brushed up against something, who knows, a thorn, a bee bite, something started them to lick, and then they kept licking. The more they lick, the more they're irritated, the more it's irritated, the more they want to lick, and we got to stop that. So first of all, I usually put antibiotics because there's definitely secondary infection. Also, if it's really raw, if the area is really raw, I will actually use a little prednisone. Now, yes, can prednisone help this be sort of immunosuppressive? Yeah, but not at low anti-inflammatory dose. And it's just gonna short course. I gotta relieve that major swelling and irritation and the redness. If you want, yeah, can you use a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory? Yeah. But if it's really red and raw, then I'm going to go steroid. If it's not so bad, I'll do like a non-steroidal, meloxicam or carprofen, vetprofen, whatever. Now, one thing I have to say, the single most important part of this is not the meds. It isn't. That's often necessary. The single most important thing to do is you got to keep your dog's tongue and away from the lesion. That means they've got to have a cone. Now, could they can, if it's in the butt end, they might have figured out a way, especially a Frenchie, to rub it on something, rub it against the carpet, rub it against the wall. That, so, I also add one more thing. I like to soak these down, physically clean them. An antibacterial shampoo, maybe something that's anti-itch, a spray, a little hydrocortisone spray. You gotta stop the urge and the pain and the discomfort and the inflammation so they don't want to rub so much, or they won't want to lick so much. But it's usually most of these, the dog did it him or herself by excessive licking, excessive rubbing. All right. I hope that answers your question. Keith, how you doing? Talia, hello. Vinny is eating dirt. We just had a question about that earlier. They eat dirt. Well, there's something in the dirt they like. There's either they're hungry, they're picking up. It's either going to be to fill them, which I doubt. I doubt it. I think there's something in that dirt that's attracting them. What it is, I have no idea. So is it all dirt, or is it one particular area, either in the yard or in the front of the house or on a walk? It's just eating. It's like dogs that eat grass. Sometimes they feel that they're upset stomach, and they know that grass is sweet. They know that grass it settles their stomach a little bit, has chlorophyll. They like it. It's moist. They don't realize that 20 minutes later, half hour, an hour later, it's going to make them vomit in many cases. They don't make the association anymore. So if they liked it when they were eating it, they're going to eat it again. If it makes them vomit immediately or within minutes, then they probably won't eat it again. All right. And that's called aversion. So that's what's weird. Grass too. So I would just watch them. Sometimes if it gets really, really, really bad, then I would recommend just during a training phase. Maybe you also may want to give them a little more food. You may want to maybe change food if you have to. But they're not, everyone says, oh, they're lacking minerals. No, I don't think they're lacking minerals. And they know that, I went to in my chemistry class, I learned that if I feel this and this, I'm lacking vitamin whatever, or I'm lacking my minerals, I'm going to start eating grass. I'm going to start eating dirt. No. It doesn't happen like that. They go, it's a natural instinct, and they just like it. And whatever it is at the time they're doing it, they like it. The only thing that I could say it may make them feel is if they feel still hungry. But it's unlikely any other reason. So that's why they call it pica. And it's just eating inanimate object. And it's usually more of a behavior thing, not necessarily a nutritional thing. But it might make them feel good at the time they're doing it. What antibiotics can I buy? It's on the neck, scratching because you can't reach it. Well, scratching too, but a collar can help stop the scratching. There's no over-the-counter antibiotics that you can have access to. However, topically, you can look for really bathing it well and then put topical antibacterial cream or preferably a spray. I find that the creams, the lotions are too occlusive. They interfere with the skin breathing. So I like the sprays better. There's one, Bactine has something called Bactine Pain Relief, which has some lidocaine in it. So it's soothing. So that you can do. But I think there's also this bacitracin has a spray that you can use. A lot of the antifungal medications have sprays which you can use, but it's usually bacterial, not necessarily fungal. But keeping it really clean, chlorhexidine is great. Get a chlorhexidine shampoo, let it soak. You can get a chlorhexidine spray, a chlorhexidine rinse. So those things can help treat it topically as well. He said it was because he was lacking minerals. There you know. Yeah, no, they don't know. Let's say that's true, Keith. They're acting lacking minerals. Do you think they know that dirt is going to solve their mineral problem? Is there any proof that minerals and dirt is going to solve the problem? No. They might like it. It might make them feel better. But also, if we were to test for minerals, I pretty much guarantee, especially if you're feeding a commercial food, it's not lacking any minerals. So, anyway, Alexia, how you doing? So, all right. Hey, Sharon, late busy day. Good. Have a busy day. Happy Mother's Day again. I'm going to wish everybody out there, because I did at the very beginning of the show, and I've had a lot of people that joined on since. So just seizure and the other dog reaching. And yes, Sharon, we just had a long discussion about seizures, and not to to prevent myself from repeating everything and boring everybody, I will anytime just give me a holler during the week and we'll talk about it. But yeah, we cover seizures pretty well. All right. And let's see. Okay. Everybody's goodbye. Put it back in the yard. Good. I think we hit everybody's question. So if I miss somebody, I do apologize. You can always reach me during the week. And thank you so much. And have everybody have a wonderful day. To all you moms out there, happy Mother's Day. And we'll be back here next week, same bat time, same bat channel here on Pet Life Radio and my Instagram Live. And for those of you have friends that have dogs, have pets, I should say, please have them follow me, because that'll give them access to me, even on, not on a Sunday, but anytime they have any questions. I get questions all the time from my followers, and I'm happy, happy to answer. Sometimes it's not even, it's more of a direction. Help them out. They're having an issue with something. It's like, where do we go from here? Do I, my GP can do it? Can I do it on my own? Do I need to see a specialist? If so, what kind of specialist? So I am very happy to answer those questions. So good. If I miss somebody, I do apologize, and I'll see you guys next week. And again, you don't have to wait till next week. If you have something that's more urgent, more pressing, just reach out to me. I'll be happy to talk to you. All right. See you next week, everybody. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.